The top 500 supercomputer list was just released, and while most of us don't run supercomputers, there's a lot to unpack there, including a battle between integrated devices with AMD, NVIDIA, and Intel, and maybe some considerations that are going to affect the future of enterprise IT. We're also going to be talking about Zscaler's reported hack, Adam Selipsky stepping down as CEO of AWS, F5's big IP breach, VMware's Fusion and Workstation free for personal use, the launch of GPT-4o and what that means in the enterprise, and a bunch of new announcements from NetApp. Stay tuned for the Gestalt IT Rundown. Welcome to the Gestalt IT Rundown, where each time we meet, we run down the IT news of the week with a variable degree of snarkiness. I'm your host, Stephen Foskett, organizer of the Tech Field Day Event Series. And joining me today as my co-host, since Mr. Tom Hollingsworth is in California for Mobility Field Day, is the phenomenal, fantastic, incredible Mitch Ashley from TechStrong Group. Mitch, I'm so glad to have you on the show.
It's a great pleasure to be here. I appreciate you asking me and being part of this rundown with you. I'm excited to do it.
Well, you know, I got to say, I am unbelievably excited about the fact that Gestalt IT and TechStrong are going to be partnering basically starting now. I love what you guys are doing. I love picking up what you're putting down. And frankly, I think that you can really turn up the quality by including us.
I love the subtle compliment, not so much, but anyway, always interested in not only improving quality, but expanding the voices. You know, I think that's a lot of what this is about. You all do some great stuff, and this has given me an opportunity to really dig in and learn more about what you are doing. And so I'm excited to be part of this and Tech Field Day and helping you amplify what you're doing already. Great. What I mentioned is the 1+1=3 proverbial. We'll see what that becomes of that.
Absolutely. And I'm excited to announce that the Rundown will soon be streaming on TechStrong TV as well. You'll be able to catch this every Wednesday. Yes, Wednesday on TechStrong TV. That's going to be fun. And you know what? Today is International Family Day. And since TechStrong and Futurum and Gestalt IT are now all part of the same family, I think we can chalk that up to being an International Family Day celebration.
I'm not sure who originated that, if that was the intent, but we'll take credit.
You know, I couldn't figure out how to weave, if you'll forgive the pun, National Nylon Stocking Day into this conversation, but I just did.
So, thank you.
So let's get started with the news of the week. Take a look at a few stories here, Mitch. Zscaler confirmed a breach by Intel Broker, who accessed a test environment unconnected to Zscaler's production systems. The company asserts that no customer or production environments were affected, but Intel Broker seems to have other ideas. The high-profile breach profiteer is offering sensitive data, including logs and SSL certificates, for 20,000 buckos on breach forums. Mitch, who should we believe in this story, and what's going on?
Well, this if you followed Intel Broker at all, they're not new to this game. They've been very active in hacking multiple spaces. Those Zscaler, companies, when they're breached, obviously control what information they can and do release, right? And they have reporting responsibilities now, increasingly so. What's interesting is that, of course, this is a major security vendor, security offering company, and does that put any of their customers at risk? And we shall see. If it's only a test environment, maybe, but then, you know, what test data is in there and how valid or close to production is that test data. What's interesting is kind of how do we stop Intel Broker? And it doesn't seem that there is anybody who's got a handle on that yet, at least not publicly. They're behind several breaches, including Home Depot, Acuity, which is part of the Space Ice breach and affecting government agencies. Europol just announced, as well as some others around breaches, just happened in this same week. So they're a very active group, suspected to be kind of one of these low and slow advanced persistent threat approaches. So they know what they're doing. They're pretty sophisticated. They're going after big companies, HPC and others. So I think the question is, who and when is going to stop Intel Broker? Because there doesn't seem to be any friction barriers for them at the moment. I guess we'll just have to wait and see. On the topic of AWS, Amazon Web Services CEO Adam Selipsky is stepping down on June 3rd and will be succeeded by Matt Garman, the current SVP of Sales and Marketing. Selipsky replaced Amazon CEO Andy Jassy in 2021 and came from Salesforce owned Tableau. Garman, an AWS veteran who was previously anticipated to succeed Jassy, is expected to drive growth and innovation, particularly in AI, to keep pace with competitors like Microsoft and Google. What should we make of this executive shuffle at one of the most important companies in enterprise IT?
Well, this is a big shift for AWS, and frankly, to me, it sounds like the direction the company might have gone a couple of years ago. As you mentioned, when Jeff Bezos turned over the Amazon reins to Andy Jassy, who had led AWS with, let's say, brilliance for quite a while, a lot of people had expected that Garman would be the one that would step in as CEO. But instead, they brought in Selipsky, an outsider who they felt could lead the company in new directions. Well, that didn't really happen. Amazon has certainly been doing quite well over the last few years, but not quite as well as some of its competitors in the cloud space. And so it looks like they're taking a new direction. To their credit, everyone at Amazon is remaining positive in their external communications about this, including Selipsky himself, who is, of course, moving on to spend more time with his family. But I think that the truth is more that Amazon needs more growth and more acceleration from the Amazon Web Services business unit. They saw that the business unit was, of course, being challenged by everybody in the industry, but perhaps being more stridently challenged than they had hoped for. And they're hoping that Garman can get the company back on the original path. Also, I would say that Garman's experience in sales and marketing suggests that we're going to see a new focus from AWS on results in terms of sales and marketing. And frankly, I think that that will please Amazon's shareholders as well. So overall, this looks like a good move for AWS, an expected one for AWS. And of course, it'll be interesting to see if Selipsky comes back with a new company of his own instead of, you know, spending time with his family. Critical vulnerabilities have been discovered in security firm F5's Big IP Next Central Manager, a key component of the widely used Big IP appliances. These pose significant security risks to some of the world's largest networks. These vulnerabilities would allow attackers to gain full administrative control, create hidden accounts, and extract sensitive data, making them particularly dangerous. F5 has released patches for two of these vulnerabilities, but three others remain unacknowledged. Another day, another hack, right? But is this one more serious than others?
Well, anytime a major security vendor in F5 has been around for a long time and used by many, many organizations, IT and enterprise organizations, it's something notable. They have to, of course, follow when the patches are available and take any prescriptive measures to prevent attacks that might happen or exploits of those vulnerabilities. And having, you know, identified five critical vulnerabilities, that's a significant number in Big IP Next Central Manager, and two of them being patched. So when does the shoe drop on the remaining three? The vulnerabilities being able to access and perform the functions that you mentioned are very extensive, very significant things. I mean, it's on the akin of remote execution of code. It's one of those things that if someone can take administrative control and create accounts, extract data, it's a big deal. We think of Big IP primarily as load balancing and DDoS mitigation, data inspection, things like that. So they are at the heart of networks across enterprises and other organizations across the world. And any unpatched vulnerabilities around an undocumented programming interface that allow a flaw like password resets with authentication or weak encryption is a big issue, something that has to be taken care of very quickly and surgically. Users are being urged to patch to mitigate these risks of exploitation, and we'll, of course, have to do the same as additional patches come out. Stay tuned. It seems there's a big news story every week about how Broadcom is restricting availability of VMware. But this week, we have some good news. VMware Workstation Pro and Fusion Pro Desktop will be free for personal use. These products, which allow users to run virtual appliances, virtual machines on their computers, were key tools for IT pros for over a decade. And I'm sure they will appreciate this new price point. But of course, commercial use still requires a fee. What's your reaction to the move?
Well, I'm one of those people that VMware describes in their announcement that first were exposed to VMware's products through the desktop version of their software. I think many of us in the community have long used Workstation Pro, or for Mac users, Fusion Pro, as our way to experiment with virtual machines, different operating systems right there on our desktops. And of course, many of us in the community who've been quite active in the VMware space have relied on the VMware vExpert licenses as our way to get access to these products. But frankly, the products are so good that many of us, including myself, were paid subscribers as well. So the idea that these things will be free for personal use, well, I think that's awful nice. I hadn't installed Fusion Pro on my Mac in recent years, since I've got a whole bunch of lab machines that I can scratch and reinstall and shuffle around. But I could definitely see myself taking advantage of this free license to install Pro, Fusion Pro again on my Mac and use it more often as a virtual machine hosting environment. I think that this also reflects the fact that Broadcom is much more interested in focusing VMware on the most profitable niches for the company and its products. And frankly, desktop applications like Workstation and Fusion weren't really all that much of a focus for the company anyway. This does suggest that we may see a little bit of a shift in the future in these products. In fact, there's a chance that we might see them phased out a little bit as they are no longer really profit-generating components. But that being said, you do still have to buy a license if you're using it for commercial use, and that could indeed be a profit center worthy of Broadcom. So let's cross our fingers and hope that this doesn't mean that Fusion and Workstation are going away, but instead it's just another sign of Broadcom simplifying their offerings and not wanting to bother charging end users like us to use their products. We had some big announcements from OpenAI this week. They announced a GPT-4o. This is their flagship AI model, and it supports multimodal input, including audio and video, in addition to text. In a very impressive demonstration, GPT-4o responded appropriately in conversation, and this will be available to all GPT users, including the free tier, with varying speed levels and prompt allowances. GPT-4o's launch, as I said, included all sorts of impressive videos, people interacting with the system. They perform functions like preparing for a job interview, natural language translation, and of course, lots and lots of appropriate sighing and laughing. This is targeted at mass market appeal, but it begs the question, is this new interface going to affect businesses in the way that they see GPT and other large language models interacting with users?
It's interesting, in the videos that were part of that demonstration, while they were much around a mass market appeal, you could see, or it begs the questions of, at least, is this the new UI model, user interface model for business and commercial offerings, whether it be to the broader market or B2B? It certainly holds that potential because Apple announced its agreement around using OpenAI's technologies as part of its offering. And with the upcoming Apple Developer Conference in San Francisco, there's a lot of speculation around the expectations that OpenAI and possibly Google, who they're also working on a relationship with, could play a significant role in reshaping Siri's current voice interface experience, which frankly has been lacking for some time, kind of languishing. It's there, but it's not up to par with what we see from something like a GPT-4.0. So I think we can stay tuned. It's not going to suddenly replace everything, but it could evolve into not only augmenting web and mobile apps, but maybe being a primary interface for many applications. NetApp has announced their new hardware and software enhancements aimed at supporting AI and cybersecurity, including high-end all-flash fast A-series arrays, ONTAP software, storage grid hardware, CyberVault immutable snapshots, and AI pod integrations with Lenovo for NVIDIA OVX systems. These advancements are designed to enhance performance, efficiency, and security for enterprise data storage solutions. What should we make of NetApp's progress in the AI-centric modern enterprise?
Well, NetApp is making, I think, expected announcements here. The core of this announcement, the core of their all-flash arrays, the AFF arrays, are basically Intel Sapphire Rapids. So they've moved up to Sapphire Rapids, which gives them PCIe 5, DDR5 memory. They're also using 200 gig Ethernet. And all of these, as expected, improve the performance of NetApp's all-flash arrays, roughly on the order of 2x performance in pretty much every category, including capacity and performance per dollar, which is probably going to be pretty welcome by NetApp's customers. They're also rejiggering the naming of these systems a little bit. They're going from 3 digits to 2 digits. They're adjusting the placement of all these things. I have to say that I endorse their BMW-esque naming scheme, which helps to understand which model is faster and bigger and badder and better. The top model, instead of being called the AFF-1000, is actually called the 1K, which, you know, as a United Flyer, makes sense to me. On the storage grid side, you know, they've made similar advancements. There are some interesting new elements there, which I have to say make storage grid a little bit more attractive, both on the low end and the high end. And then on the cybersecurity side, my colleague Krista McComber wrote a bit about that as well. One of the best aspects of that is to balance the availability of snapshots with, well, let's call them logical air gaps, because they're not actually physical air gaps, but it does make sense as a way to create immutable snapshots. And frankly, I think that that's going to be welcomed in the cyberspace. So overall, NetApp is delivering an expected advancement here with these all-flash arrays, but not at all a bad one. In fact, it's a really good one for customers. And I expect that a lot of people are going to jump rapidly to these new models. That's why it's interesting that the old models are going to remain on offer from NetApp going forward. Frankly, I think that that's a short-term move for the company. And I think that pretty soon we'll be seeing the retirement of those old 3-digit all-flash arrays in favor of these new Sapphire Rapids models. Now let's take a closer look. The June 2024 Top 500 Supercomputer list was released at ISC, and there's a lot to unpack there. The Top 500 Supercomputers list includes some significant trends in the supercomputing landscape. NVIDIA takes 7 spots with Grace-based systems, including 3 of the top 20. The balance between Intel and AMD remains pretty much static, but there's a shift toward co-packaged CPUs and accelerators, which is interesting because Intel just announced that they're going to sunset Ponte Vecchio, their entry in the space, and skip the next generation of their integrated co-packaged CPU and GPU architecture. Interestingly, HPE was a big winner here. They are leading in developing and deploying new supercomputer systems, and they enable 8 of the 10 Grace and MI300A entrants on the list. We also see ARM well represented on the list with 8 new servers, which signifies another shift in the space. One of the things that I always look for in the supercomputer list is the trickle-down effects that happen. Since supercomputing is one of the key platforms that proves out new technologies, like integrated CPU and GPU, new connectivity approaches, new CPU architectures, new accelerators, and that sort of thing. But of course, supercomputing is not enterprise computing, it's not cloud computing, and many of the technologies that appear there and are adopted there never really do make their way down into the enterprise. But let's take a closer look at the impact of some of these announcements on enterprise and cloud systems. Mitch, what's your thoughts on the top 500 supercomputer list?
Well, it's interesting. You know, hardware is cool again, Stephen. And supercomputing has always been cool, of course, now because of AI and NVIDIA. And of course, ARM playing a bigger role in our worlds. I think it's really changing the landscape of supercomputing. You know, the static or relatively static competition between AMD and Intel is not surprising, but Intel's also making a massive investment in becoming a foundry for other companies to manufacture their chips as well as Intel chips for them. We'll see what impact that has here. Of course, NVIDIA taking 7 spots is not entirely surprising, but it's good to see with the popularity of their Grace Hopper-based CPUs. If you don't know who Grace Hopper is, please Google her. You'll learn that a lot of what we do today is based on her early contributions to the industry. Also, I think ARM is particularly notable, and I spend time around open source projects, and they've made a big investment in making sure that open source projects, for example, are deployable and supportable on ARM systems, primarily for edge computing, but also other applications. So they're making a big shift, not in just using ARM in the data center, but making sure that software can be delivered and run on ARM processors. So it's good to see this. Of course, where's quantum on the horizon? How soon that will be here? It's making progress, but we have a ways to go. So interesting innovations occurring across the board here.
Yeah, let's dive into some of these specifics here. One of the things that really caught my eye, as well as the eye of the analysts here at Futurum, was the incredible impact that co-packaged GPU and CPU systems are having on this list. So we've got, obviously, I mentioned that NVIDIA has a bunch of these Grace Hopper CPU-GPU combos on the list. Those of you who have watched the rundown know this, but essentially Grace and Hopper are NVIDIA's, now previous generation, but still pretty awesome CPU and GPU. And they co-package those with on a single device with high bandwidth memory as a way to deliver maximum performance. And now we've got a bunch of Grace Hopper-based systems out there in the supercomputing space. If we believe, and I certainly do, what Lisa Su has said about co-package, it is really a tremendous benefit in terms of power, not just performance, because we spend a lot of time and a lot of energy moving data around from system memory to GPU and so on in a more conventional system. And co-packaging those delivers incredible performance. I think those of us who are using Apple's M family of CPUs can see that as well, because they've taken a similar approach of putting memory, CPU, GPU, TPU, accelerators, all that on the same package. But it's interesting that while we have these Grace Hopper systems and MI300A systems from AMD coming to, up to speed, we also have Intel's co-packaged Ponte Vecchio systems, including the number two on the list, number two with a bullet, and maybe even number one when you run the right performance test on it, coming from Intel. And yet, Intel has kind of backed off from their promises of co-packaging all sorts of things in the next generation of products. In fact, it looks like Intel's next generation is going to be pretty much a conventional architecture where you have a GPU add-in card communicating over PCI Express with CPUs. That's kind of a surprise. I don't know what is going on quite with this, except to say that Intel maybe felt that there just wasn't enough market time for another generation of products to come to market, develop a market, be delivered, and so on. And they would rather hold off until they have a really compelling competitor for the next generation products from NVIDIA and AMD, which have now been announced. NVIDIA's Blackwell looks just incredible. I can't wait to see the GB200 and what that thing will be able to do. I imagine that there will be some of those systems on the next supercomputing list. But despite the fact that they're still holding strong, I think that Intel is going to kind of miss out on a wave of supercomputing upgrades over the next year. What do you make of all of this sort of Intel, NVIDIA, AMD battle?
You know, it is a head scratcher. While Intel would kind of go back to a traditional path around separate GPUs and CPUs, because the system on a chip certainly has taken kind of the industry by storm. A lot of people are doing that, of course. This is pure speculation on my part, but the thing I wonder about is, are there added complexities of delivering a product that's a system on a chip that by not doing so, Intel might be able to innovate faster in their CPU and GPU product lines, taking that kind of traditional dual path? There may be other reasons as well. We'll have to see, but clearly Intel's been behind in the AI space for those reasons. So maybe they need to do catching up on that before they kind of go back to a system on a chip approach. We'll see where that goes. But that's how I can put the logic together of why that might make sense.
Yeah, indeed. This actually makes me think of Pat Gelsinger wielding the mighty CEO machete on product plans. Maybe he looked at the roadmap, he looked at the timing, he looked at the development space, and he said, you know what? There's just not market space for these products, and had the foresight and ability to go in there and say, no, these are done. These are done. We're going to skip these. We're going to move right on to next generation. Seems like that's what Intel is doing in a lot of the market. They're willing to give up short-term market share and give up short-term wins in favor of bringing really competitive next-generation products to market. I also think that there's a trend at Intel to focus on the truly competitive space instead of basically trying to take what volume they can with what products they've got coming along in the pipeline, and instead say, no, we want leading products on leading process nodes that have really leading margins as well. And frankly, these products are not going to cut it. Because, that's kind of what we've seen here. But, of course, that's a short-term risk for Intel because they probably are going to be losing market share. The fact that Intel and AMD have roughly the same market share in the supercomputing list also is interesting because, of course, it shows that AMD is actually doing incredibly well in the HPC space, much better than it's doing in cloud or enterprise or certainly mobile devices. And yet, that hasn't yet affected Intel as much as you might think, since people still are buying Intel in all of those spaces, including in HPC. Now, the ARM question is another really interesting one as well. We do see ARM-based supercomputing. We've seen some really cool announcements. There was an AI, a large language model developed in Japan recently on an ARM supercomputer that is on the list here. That was pretty neat to see. Do you think that alternative instruction sets like ARM and maybe even RISC-V are going to have an impact on HPC? And do you think that that's a signal of some kind of change?
I think you already said it. It has happened. Just the M chip series from Apple, which interesting, there was a disturbance in the force recently with the M series, with the M series around the announcement of the iPads, the higher end pad. iPad is actually skipping the M3, going for the M4. And reportedly, there were some yield problems with the M3 chip because they're using a kind of one generation behind manufacturing process. So they're de-emphasizing M3 and moving to M4. Maybe we'll see that happen more quickly than traditional. But the M series is an ARM-based processor. Kind of tied to some of our previous story. If you've been running VMware Fusion on a Mac, you know that suddenly that didn't work because it's built for Intel processors. So you had to find an alternative. And I think Apple's another example of showing that ARM is very competitive. And I think it's also enabling to go faster to market. And of course, not pay homage or licensing royalties to Intel in the process. So I expect that to continue to grow, just like we're seeing with NVIDIA.
Yeah, absolutely. Full disclosure, I actually have a M4 iPad Pro sitting on my porch at home as we are recording this, and I'm eager to open it up and give it a shot. It is an impressive device. And as you mentioned, the nuance there, I think, is important. Apple moved forward aggressively into 3-nanometer process nodes, but TSMC's second generation, or so-called second generation 3-nanometer process node, is really where the future is. I suspect that the M3 generation is going to be a very short one indeed, and Apple's going to move to M4 with pretty much everything else. Kind of tying in with all of these discussions, though, I think that we're going to see more and more rollout of processors that are complete systems, whether in mobile devices, in corporate devices, in the data center, in the cloud, in HPC. We're going to see more and more emphasis on co-packaged devices that include memory, CPU, GPU, accelerator, et cetera, all on the same package. I think we are going to see an aggressive move into devices like Intel's Ponte Vecchio that combine multiple different chips, multiple different process nodes, multiple different sources on the same device. And I think that that's really the future of computing overall, whether it's on an iPad or on the HPC list. And I don't think Intel is going to miss out on that trend. In fact, I think that Intel is wisely skipping a couple of steps in order to stay ahead there. So it, those are the kind of things that I'm reading out of this top 500 supercomputer list. If you have some feedback on this, we would love to hear from you as well. What did we get right? What did we get wrong? Drop us a message. We'd love to hear from you. Now let's take a look at some of the events that are happening in the weeks ahead. Today and tomorrow is Mobility Field Day. Tune in live on LinkedIn, on Techstrong TV. You'll see presentations from a number of different companies, Arista, Celona, Cisco, Fortinet, Juniper, Ubiquiti, and Eno. And the last two are actually brand new companies that we haven't seen before at Mobility Field Day. We've got some great people there, including some first-time delegates, as well as our future colleague, Ron Westfall. So don't miss that. Also, we're going to be returning with App Dev Field Day at the end of the month. We've got some big announcements of some high-profile companies that you might have heard mentioned on the rundown even today coming to present there at App Dev, so keep an eye out for that. I'll be heading to Orlando for Click Connect June 3rd through 5th. There's still time to register if you're in the data space. I'd love to see you there. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we're headed to Cisco Live as well that same week. So if you're heading to Cisco Live in Las Vegas, give Tom Hollingsworth a shout out. Also coming up soon is the annual 6.5 Summit. You can watch that online June 11th through 13th. There's an incredible keynote speaker, Bill McDermott from ServiceNow at the 6.5 Summit. And I do recommend watching. It's going to be great. They just updated the list of companies that are presenting, and it is a who's who of the enterprise IT industry. We've also got Cloud Field Day coming up. We've got an exclusive event at HPE Discover with Aruba, and we've got a lot more Tech Field Day events. In fact, if you go to techfieldday.com, you can see a list of events all the way out into Q3, and we would love to have you be involved with those. Thank you so much for joining us for the Gestalt IT Rundown. And Mitch, thank you so much for joining and stepping in as co-host for this special episode. I definitely look forward to collaborating more with you.
Absolutely, and happy to be a part of it, and glad to welcome the Tech Field Day and Futurum family of people, products, et cetera, as part of TechStrong TV and other TechStrong platforms, DevOps.com, and where we are streaming live, as you mentioned, just kind of highlight that we're streaming live the Tech Field Day event today and tomorrow. And those will also be available on TechStrong TV for replay. So which is, if you haven't visited TechStrong.tv, all kinds of interviews, shows, we're going to be carrying all of your podcasts, all of your content. Eventually, we'll get that uploaded here really quick. So I'm excited to be working with you, Steve, and humbled and appreciative of being asked to be part of the co-hosting today.
It's great to have you. So yeah, absolutely. Check out TechStrong TV. We're actually literally, Mitch and I are literally integrating all this stuff as we speak, but it's going to be integrated soon. It's going to be awesome. And there's actually some new, I don't want to spoil TechStrong's announcements. There's going to be some exciting announcements coming from TechStrong as well in the future. You can also catch new episodes of The Rundown, of course, every Wednesday as a YouTube video. Just look for Gestalt IT Rundown. You can find us in your favorite podcast applications as well. We publish an audio version of this. And as mentioned, you'll be able to catch it on TechStrong TV. We'll be back next Wednesday to talk about all of the IT news of the week, including a couple of stories that didn't quite make it into today's episode. And I look forward to that. But until then, for myself, for the Gestalt IT family, for the TechStrong and the Futurum family, for Tom Hollingsworth and everybody else, here's wishing you and yours a fantastic and nerdy day. We'll be right back.